That was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. 1 year after a failed coup, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says his security advisors will be meeting today to discuss extending a state of emergency. The July 15, 2016 coup attempt killed 250. Exiled cleric Fethullah Gülen is accused of being behind the failed coup. He denies it. Mr. Erdogan says no terror attacks, coup attempts, diplomatic plots, or economic traps will do away with his government. University of San Francisco analyst Stephen Zunis.
The country is actually quite divided. It's unfortunate because people from across the political spectrum came together to oppose the military coup. It initially seemed like a triumph for democracy. But unfortunately, Erdogan took advantage of the emergency and began to round up dissidents.
Last week, the leader of the opposition Republican People's Party called for an independent accounting over the failed coup. At least one person was killed, dozens more injured, most of them policemen in clashes in the Egyptian Nile island of Al-Warraq. And security forces moved in to demolish illegal buildings. Despite using tear gas, police withdrew without removing island residents. President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has ordered a campaign to recover the state island, which has been encroached upon. Iran has imprisoned a Chinese-American man, 37-year-old Shi Yue Wang, for 10 years after accusing him of infiltrating the country. Same time, the brother of Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has been detained. He is on allegations of financial impropriety. This is VOA News. In Venezuela, gunmen shot into a crowd of voters, killing one person, wounding at least three others during an unofficial opposition-led referendum aimed at trying to end two decades of socialist rule. The opposition had hoped for a large turnout, and they got 7 million voters. Their goal was to challenge the legitimacy of the government's planned July 30th vote to form a new constituent assembly to dissolve state institutions and rewrite the Constitution. Mark Jones is a Rice University analyst.
If the Constituent Assembly is held, the Constitution will be rewritten in such a way that it will lock Chavistas into power forever, or at least as long as they can hold power.
About 100 people have been killed in almost daily anti-government protest over Venezuela's deepening economic, social, and political crisis. Pakistan military says they have launched a major ground offensive to clear an isolated, militant-infested border valley that Islamic State loyalists are using to export terrorism into the country from bases in neighboring Afghanistan. U.S. military, in partnership with Afghan forces, have been conducting major ground operations backed by airstrikes against IS bases. A U.S. airstrike last week killed the chief of Islamic State in Afghanistan, Abu Sayyid. Thousands of people rallied in Warsaw to oppose the Polish government's controversial new court reforms, which opponents see as a threat to judicial independence. The law gives lawmakers a dominant role in appointing judges, a move that opposition parties and rights groups said would make jurists subject to political influence. China has released dissident Xu Zhiyong after serving a 4-year sentence for gathering a crowd to disturb public order. Xu was a co-founder of the New Citizens Movement, which seeks to work within the system for change. Jared Genser heads the rights advocacy group Freedom Now.
I'm quite confident that given the way that the Chinese tend to treat people like him who are recently released, he will be under very close surveillance, not able to talk to the media, and have very, very limited contact with the outside world.
Xu's release came just 2 days after the death of Liu Xiaobo, a Nobel Peace Laureate, and China's best-known human rights prisoner after a battle with cancer. His ashes scattered at sea on Saturday. American actor Martin Landau, who won an Oscar portraying the embittered horror film icon Bela Lugosi in 1994's Ed Wood, has died in Hollywood. He was 89.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, July 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. An American journalist believed to have been abducted in the DRC has been found alive.
She was not abducted as such. She just got a place to hide herself, and she managed to came out after the terrorists have gone and was rescued by a team of our soldiers and the game rangers.
Lamba Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Gambia has established a new commission of inquiry to investigate business activities of former President Yahya Jammeh. We'll chat with one of the 2017 Mo Ibrahim Fellows. Congo-Brazzaville says Sunday's first-round parliamentary election was peaceful, but some opposition groups stayed away.
How can you organize election in a country where there is social, economical, and political crisis? So that's why we rejected all of these things.
Jean Muzika is the U.S. representative of the Opposition Front for the Respect of Constitutional Order and Democratic Ordinance, known as FROCA. And we will look at 1 year after Senegal's new program to stop child begging. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post in our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government says an American journalist who was believed to have been abducted Friday by armed men in the country's Ituri province was found alive on Sunday. Lisa Dupuy and 11 wardens working for the Okapi Wildlife Reserve in the northeast of the country were abducted on Friday by the Mai Mai Simba militia group. Information Minister Lamba Mende says Ms. Dupuy was never abducted as such. Instead, she hid herself and came out only after what Mende called the terrorists had left. And she was rescued by DRC troops sent to find Dupuy and 11 wardens working for the reserve. But Mende expressed regrets that 4 wardens and civilians were killed in the operation.
What I can say now is that our governor told me that she was not abducted as such. She just got a place to hide herself. And she managed to came out after the terrorists have gone and was rescued by a team of our soldiers and the game rangers who were looking for her. And that now she's safe in a Pulu Reserve office. Fortunately, we have mixed feelings because during the attack during which she escaped, we lost 4 game rangers and 1 porter. So 5 people died, but the journalist is alive.
You said gang of terrorists. Does your government know who are the gang of terrorists?
Until now, I am not able to tell you who they are. They just came and attacked the reserve. So the inquiry is going on, fact findings are going on to determine who is the group responsible for this attack.
Your elections commission has said that it may not be possible to hold elections. Has your government accepted that notion?
Till now, we have not yet got a meeting with the electoral commission. We have learned about difficulties saying they are meeting. But as you know, the 31st December Accord say that when the Electoral Commission meet difficulties, it has to meet with the government as well as the follow-up committee of the Accord to discuss what to do. And since this commission is not yet set up, the president is working to set it up. Maybe within 2 to 3 weeks, we shall be able to have this meeting between Electoral Commission, the government, and this follow-up commission of the agreement.
In the meantime, Mr. Minister, the United States has threatened to impose further targeted sanctions on anyone who it says is hindering the election process in your country.
You know, James, we are fed up with people talking, you know, anyhow. An ambassador cannot speak like that. If they need to impose sanction on our country, let them speak with the Security Council. We shall see. say we are responsible or guilty of or something. You can't sanction somebody for something he didn't do. We know that the Electoral Commission is meeting problems with security. Are we guilty for security? We know that we as the government are responsible for allowing Electoral Commission, security, and finance. And they didn't talk about finance. They are talking of security, possible for security, but we are not guilty of insecurity. So if this lady who spoke about sanctions are referring to those who are spreading insecurity, then she will work with the government to punish them.
Lamba Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The Congo-Brazzaville government says Sunday's first-round parliamentary and local election was peaceful throughout the country. The African Union office in Brazzaville also reportedly said the voting was peaceful. This despite the fact that some opposition parties stayed away, including the Front for the Respect of Constitutional Order and Democratic Alternance, known as FROCA. A total of 700 candidates ran to fill the 151 available parliamentary seats, most of them from President Denis Sassou Nguesso's Congolese ruling Labour Party. Jean Muzika is the FROCA U.S. representative. He says there was no way the opposition could have taken part in the poll amid the country's economic, social, and political crisis, and when some opposition leaders are still in prison.
The vote which took place on Sunday in the Congo-Brazzaville, I can say in two words, these votes are falsified elections. These elections were rejected by the main opposition coalition, which is one part led by Ms. Claudine Munari, which is the FOCAD EIDC and the CJ3M coalition. And the second one, it's the coalition led by Mr. Machar Ndong. They rejected the election in the Congo because this election are falsified election. It's just electoral masks to allow Mr. Sassou Nguesso to stay on power.
But by not taking part in the election, the opposition in reality is giving the government back to the president.
We took part of a presidential election last time. And before those presidential elections, Mr. Denis Sassou Nguesso did the referendum of the constitution of 2002. But normally, he ran 2 terms of presidential. So he was not able to run the 3rd term. But Mr. Nguesso forced people to go for a referendum, and it was rejected. Less than 5% of the Congolese went to the polls, went to vote. But despite that, the opposition were advised to participate to the presidential election to show the national and international committees that they are able to change the things in the Congo. After those elections, Mr. Denis Sassou Nguesso lost the election. He only got 8% of the polls. But he proclaimed himself as a winner with 61%. And that's why these elections, we decided that we cannot go since there is not fair election in the Congo.
Although there was poor turnout, the government said that the election went on smoothly. Even the African Union mission in Brazzaville said that the voting was peaceful on Sunday.
No. Those indications are given by the running party, because right now there is a lot of crisis in the Congo. So how can you organize election in a country where there is social, economical, and political crisis? So that's why we rejected all of these things.
Jean Muzika is the U.S. representative for the opposition Front for the Respect of Constitutional Order and Democratic Alternance, known as FROCA. You are speaking with me from Jersey City, New Jersey. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and today is Monday, July 17th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The Gambia has established a new commission of inquiry to investigate the business activities of former President Yahya Jammeh, who fled the country and left the country's treasury in bad shape. City Mariner reports from Banjul.
Gambia's President Adama Barrow said the commission instituted to investigate allegations of corruption and businesses of ex-President Yahya Jammeh is not a witch hunt against him and his close associates. Jammeh and his close associates are accused of abuse of office, financial mismanagement, and willful violation of the constitution. Preliminary investigation accused of laundering hundreds of millions of dollars amounting to billions of dollars out of the country, according to Gambian authorities.
Your appointments are not based on partisan consideration, but it has rather been carefully vetted and guided by competence, integrity, and qualification. The task before you as commission members is enormous. However, given your experience and profile, I have full confidence that you will, in your impartial deliberation, shed light on the allegations against the former president and associate.
Jammeh ran everything from bakeries to commercial farms during his tenure and was regularly accused of taking over successful private business ventures for his own gain with the help of his associate. The commission will subpoena some of Jammeh's associates after last month's freezing of his domestic asset affected several other businesses. Surahata Jane, a veteran Gambian lawyer, is the chairperson of the three-member commission.
Our commission is quasi-judicial as well as investigative. It must be clearly understood that the commission of inquiry into the assets of ex-president Yahya Jammeh and into the activities and properties of his family and close associates so far as they are connected is not a law court and has no jurisdiction to hold a criminal trial. However, we are empowered by law to make orders, advance findings, and recommendations that may impinge on individual rights and privileges.
According to Justice Minister Bah Tembedu, government will not interfere in the work and the independence of the commission.
The process that we seek to engage in is as important as the result we seek to achieve from it. You will be assured of independence. There will not be any attempts by this government to influence your decisions in any way.
Meanwhile, there has been mixed reaction from ordinary Gambians in the streets of Banjul with the news of the establishment of the Commission of Inquiry.
Set up commissions of inquiries that will look into the activities of government officials. But if it stops at only the president and his associates, it would give the impression that this is selective justice. While I wouldn't say that they wouldn't set up such commissions, I think it is profoundly important that whatever commission that has to be set up must be one that should look into the activities of top officials of the former regime and not only the president and his associates. That would amount to selective justice.
Well, I think it's a good move because if we are to recover what we lost in the past 22 years in the right way and manner, is a good thing if at all they are going to do it within the dictates of the law and not see it as a way of witch hunting a former president who was a citizen of this country. I think it's a good move by the government. So I believe that Jammeh may have been the president, but he may not have acted alone.
Jammeh stole at least $50 billion. Commission is expected to present their recommendation to President Adama Barrow 3 months after the exercise. Reporting for VOA News in Banjul, I am Seni M.K. Marena.
One of the 2017 Mo Ibrahim Foundation Leadership Fellows says the international media needs to do a better job in showcasing Africa's complexity, not so much about writing positive stories about the continent. Rob Tell Paley of Liberia says one thing that could also help change Africa's image is good governance and good leadership, and Africans holding not only their leaders accountable, but also holding themselves accountable. Ms. Paley, an academic and activist and author, is based at the University of Oxford in London. She will do her fellowship at the African Development Bank. She says while corruption is not limited to Africa, it is more problematic when government officials or the elite are stealing from the poor.
I think corruption is something that exists across the globe. I mean, we've seen so many cases of corrupt practices outside of the continent. So I don't subscribe to the notion that the continent of Africa is inherently corrupt or it's more corrupt than any other part of the world. I think the issues that are, you know, unique to us is that there's so many people on the continent who are poor. And so when you have a small elite group of people who just engage in theft, and I call it that, complete and utter theft, where they're stealing lots and lots and lots of money, not only in the public sector, but also in the private sector, at the expense and at the detriment of large populations across the continent, that's when it becomes concerning and debilitating. In terms of Liberia, clearly, you know, corruption is an endemic problem in the country. And I will reiterate that this is not just a continental problem, but it is, it's huge, and it's something that probably it takes every single person. And what I usually say, you know, I wrote a children's book called Bagba, and the purpose of writing the book was to start a national conversation with children in Liberia as well as across the continent about what it means to have integrity and how that, you know, that sort of message of being an honest person in society, it should be valued, that it's not just, you know, people who work in government or people who work in the private sector who engage in corrupt practices, but it's the everyday corruption that becomes a problem.
I want to ask a question about the image of Africa as a whole. People have argued in the past that Africa was always given this bad image when it came to how we in the international media cover Africa. Do you think the image of Africa today is improving compared to the past? And if not, what is it that you hope to do during your fellowship or at your fellowship to, you know, help with the image of Africa?
Well, I'm less concerned about the image of Africa in the international reportage than I am about the complexity, the lack of complexity, right? And so I would say that the international media landscape needs to do a better job of showcasing Africa's complexity, not so much about positive stories, because I think that there are lots of really amazing positive stories coming out, but there are also challenges on the continent that need to be exposed and that need to be talked about. In terms of changing that image, I think part of it is just leadership, right? So governance structures from the top all the way to the bottom, from the bottom all the way to the top, that the quote-unquote single story about Africa is not going to change until we fix our institutional structures, until we fix the continent in such a way that we can stand up and hold our heads high. And that goes back to our leadership. It goes back to not only national leadership, but also local leadership. And it goes back to Africans themselves, not only holding their leaders accountable, but holding themselves accountable in their communities, in their schools, in their mosques, in their churches, and having integrity and just working really, really hard to make sure that, you know, their respective countries are developing and are moving forward in the way that other countries are and other regions are.
Ms. Bailey, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Robtel Paley is a Liberian and one of the three recipients of the 2017 Mo Ibrahim Foundation Leadership Fellowship. She was speaking with me from London. A year into the Senegal government's new program to stop child begging, Human Rights Watch says official efforts are falling short. Tens of thousands of Talibi, as the Quranic school students are known, are forced to beg on the streets throughout Senegal to bring back money to their religious teachers. Human Rights Watch Africa researcher James Warmington talks to Ricky Stryak about how the program needs to improve to protect children's rights.
The first success is just that the program itself really reflects a priority being given by the Senegalese government and by Macky Sall himself to tackling the problem of child begging. And certainly Sall's personal commitment to stopping the problem and even to prosecuting and sanctioning those people who force children to beg is an extremely welcome development and reflects, I think, the increased attention that the problem of Talibé has got also amongst Senegalese society and Senegalese civil society. Also, it did have some concrete impact when the program was first implemented. There's been at least 1,500 children who've been picked off the streets of Dakar up until March 2017, and hundreds of those children have been returned to their parents.
After these children are returned to their families, how are we sure that they're not being sent right back to the Daras, basically?
Well, and that's, I think, a really, really good question. And certainly a key element of this is educating parents. And the Senegalese government, I think, has placed a focus on educating parents as to the fact that there are children, many, many children in Quranic schools who are forced to beg and who even suffer worst abuses, including physical abuse and sexual abuse. And so I think a big priority of the Senegalese government has been to try to educate parents to make sure that children are not being sent back to the Daras.
J. Tim Warmington is Human Rights Watch Africa researcher. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from New York. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
A very good morning to you, James. We begin on a rather tragic note as 8 football fans died after a stampede broke out at the Stade Demba Diop Stadium in Senegal on Saturday evening during the League Cup final match between Union Sportive Alkem FC and Stade Umbor FC. A wall collapsed at the football stadium, injuring almost 90 people after fighting began between rival fans, and police had to respond with tear gas when Umbor FC took a 2-1 lead over their rivals, Ouso FC. Senegalese journalist Temba John Matthew spoke with my colleague James Batty from Dakar.
As I'm talking to you, 10 people are dead already. 2 died last night and then 2 died this evening. Those that sustained injuries, they were hospitalized, but finally they died this evening. And then government spokesman Seydou Gay, but he said the government, they're not going to take this very lightly. They really expressed regrets over the incident, but judicial inquiry should open latest tomorrow. Not only sporting activities, even the country was really, they were only legislative campaigns. All that have been suspended.
Uganda have resumed training ahead of their 2018 CHAN qualifier return march against South Sudan. The Cranes got back to Kampala after the Angola's draw in the first leg on Saturday. The squad trained at the Philip Omodi Stadium on Sunday under the watch of their coach, Milton Micho Sredjevic.
We don't need to put pressure on the team and players. Pressure need to stay with me and technical bench. Let players come on the field, relax, focus, concentrated, and the most important, responsible to score the goal and goals and to qualify us forward in the CHAN qualifiers.
In all the games played across all the venues on the African continent this past weekend, Mauritania beat Liberia 2-0. Togo national team, the Hawks, managed to hold their opponents, Benin Republic, to a 1-1 draw at home as Zimbabwe failed to produce the magical form that won them the 2017 COSAFA Cup in South Africa as they fell 1-0 to Namibia. Elsewhere, Angola moved closer to qualifying for CHAN 2018 when they beat host Mauritius 1-0. Zambia made easy work of Swaziland as they recorded a 4-goal advantage in the first leg of the African Nations Championship qualifier. In all the games, South Africa defeated a stubborn Botswana side 2-0 as Ethiopia moved to within touching distance of the third round after they defeated host Djibouti 5-1 on Saturday. In athletics news, South Africa finished top of the medals table for the first time at the IWAF World Under 18 Athletics Championship in Nairobi as the 5-day championship came to a close on Sunday. South Africa, who finished 5th in 1999 and 2005, amassed 11 medals altogether. China finished 2nd in the medals table with 5 gold, 2 silver and 4 bronze medals. Host Kenya finished a disappointing 4th with 1 gold, 7 silver and 4 bronze medal. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, July 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that your week will be a productive one.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 1730 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA. On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.